A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Avon, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to episode 13 of British Invaders, the podcast where we talk all about British science fiction television. And today we are continuing our discussion of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, in all its various forms, was created by Douglas Adams, as we've already said, who was born in 1952 in Cambridge, and he actually went to college in Cambridge. He went to St. John's College, which turns up in slightly disguised format in some of his later books and television work. As we've already said, he was part of the Footlights Review, which is a very famous comedy review at Cambridge University, which has a very long history of producing some of the cream of British comedians. Before he got into writing for the BBC, he did all sorts of strange jobs, including very famously working as a bodyguard for a while. When he was a student, he'd gone on a backpacking trip around Europe, and he tells a very famous story about lying in a field in Austria, gazing up at the stars. And because he was using the Hitchhiker's Guide to Europe book to guide his travels around Europe, he was lying there rather drunk in a field one night, wondering why there wasn't a similar guide to travels around the universe.
Yeah, thus you get the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is typical of Douglas Adams doing these odd associative things of starting with one thing and jumping to something that's completely different but somehow related. Douglas Adams had worked in a number of different TV and radio things. He had already done some comedy work on television with Simon Jones, who played Arthur, and with Graham Chapman, who was in Monty Python, and other people like that. He went on, after most of the Hitchhiker's work that he did, to write some other humorous books. He wrote a couple of novels in the Dirk Gently series. There was Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency and The Long Dark Tea Time of the Soul. Dirk Gently was this detective in this other series who was a holistic detective, so he would find the whole cause of a crime and the whole criminal, and he was always claiming not to be psychic, although he sort of was psychic. It was quite strange, but it was also quite good. It was very fun. He also wrote a couple of books with John Lloyd. The Meaning of Lif was one, and then The Deeper Meaning of Lif, which are very fun books. They both take the premise that there are these names of places on street signs and highway signs to towns that are not used with any meanings beyond, well, the names of the towns and the names of the streets. So they wrote these books that are basically fake dictionaries with all these names of places and humorous definitions that they attach to them. They're very fun. They're fun to read.
Yes, they're worth getting hold of if you can track them down, because they are quite humorous. He also went on to write a quite well-known non-fiction book, which was called Last Chance to See, which he co-wrote with a zoologist called Mark Cowardine, who he'd met while working on a magazine article for one of the Sunday newspaper magazines. And it became a much larger project, which was about Douglas Adams traveling around the world to find out more about various endangered species. And he goes to various places. Like, he starts the book in Madagascar and he carries on around the world with Mark Cowardine. And it's certainly, I think, it triggered Adams' interest in ecology and the environment. And it was quite successful when it first came out in the mid-1980s. And it came with a radio series that accompanied it. And I think it was then available later on CD. Interestingly, it's recently been revived by the BBC, but with Stephen Fry now travelling around the world to visit various endangered creatures.
Stephen Fry, as you might not be surprised to know, was a friend of Douglas Adams for many years. Douglas Adams actually considered Last Chance to See to be his most important book, and he became quite a serious environmentalist. Douglas Adams was one of these people who did a lot of different things. He was not only into this comedy writing and a bit of comedy acting, but he also did this serious environmental writing, and he was involved in computers. He was involved with the Macintosh from the very beginning and various other things with computers. Later on in the late 90s, he was developing a website called H2G2. Which was meant to be the real Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That's what H2G2 stood for. And in fact, it was very much like Wikipedia. In fact, early on, H2G2 and Wikipedia were the two competing sites of that particular type. He was also writing for Doctor Who back in the late 70s, in the Tom Baker era. He wrote for Doctor Who a few times, and he was the script editor for Doctor Who. He first wrote for Doctor Who in a serial called The Pirate Planet, which was part of The Key to Time, which certainly had Douglas Adams' style of humor to it. It involved a planet that went around... Well, it would teleport itself around other planets and exploit all their resources. Quite absurd and bizarre and pretty good. And as a result of writing that, they made him the script editor of Doctor Who for one season, for season 17 in the late 70s. And when he was script editor, he co-wrote City of Death, which was a classic Doctor Who serial. The original author of the script submitted these scripts, and they were not quite usable for Doctor Who, so a couple of people on staff, Douglas Adams being one of them, reworked the story, and then once that had been done, Adams basically rewrote all of the dialogue, and the humor in the dialogue in City of Death definitely shows as being Douglas Adams. There was also another Doctor Who script called Shada, which Douglas Adams wrote. And they started filming it, then never completed it due to a strike that was going on at the time. And there have been a couple of forms at various times in which that footage that was completed and some linking narrations and things were released to the public. And eventually there was an animated version that was made available on the BBC website. It's still there. And an audio-only version that is made available on CD by a company called Big Finish.
Sadly, Douglas Adams is no longer with us, of course, because he died in May 2001 when he was 49 years old. And tragically, he died while he was exercising in a gym in California, which is where he was living then. So we were deprived of any more of his fantastic creations. There was a book published after his death called The Salmon of Doubt, which contains some of his writings and some of his ideas for his next books.
There were a couple of interesting projects that he was working on at the time when he died. One of them was a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy theatrical movie, which of course was eventually produced, and he had written a script for that, which was used as a first draft script, and many of the things that he was working on at the time were used. He was also working on a plan to revive Doctor Who, and that particular plan never came to fruition, but of course Doctor Who eventually was revived.
The Salmon of Doubt was going to be the title of the third Dirk Gently novel, but he said that while he was writing it, he felt that the story seemed to fit more into the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy universe, so it may have gone on to be the sixth novel in that series instead. But you can find some elements of it in The Salmon of Doubt.
The babelfish is small, yellow, leech-like, and probably the oddest thing in the universe. It feeds on brainwave energy, absorbing all unconscious frequencies and then excreting telepathically a matrix formed from the conscious frequencies and nerve signals picked up from the speech centers of the brain. The practical upshot of which is that if you stick one in your ear, you instantly understand anything said to you in any form of language. The speech you hear decodes the brainwave matrix. Now, it is such a bizarrely improbable coincidence that anything so mind-bogglingly useful could evolve purely by chance that many thinkers have chosen to see it as a final and clinching proof of the non-existence of God. The argument runs something like this. I refuse to prove that I exist, says God, for proof denies faith, and without faith I am nothing. But, says man, the Babel fish is a dead giveaway, isn't it? It proves you exist, and so therefore you don't. QED. Oh dear, says God, I hadn't thought of that, and promptly vanishes in a puff of logic. Oh, that was easy, says man. And for non-
Now, we have been talking about the 1981 television version of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but there are some other versions of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy kicking around as well.
Absolutely. There were multiple versions of the guide. And I think people will find that they prefer the version that perhaps they came across first. I know people have their particular favorites. They all seem to have the basic story, which we described in the last episode, about the search for the mythical planet Magrathea and the discovery of the true secret of Earth and life, the universe, and everything. But then each version has some extra bits added into it and goes off in slightly different directions. It started originally in 1978 as a BBC radio series when Douglas Adams was actually looking to do something about science fiction comedy, and met up with a producer who agreed to give him the go-ahead to produce The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And the first series came out, as I say, in 1978, and then there was a Christmas special episode shortly afterwards, and then there went on to be a second series in 1980. When it was first produced, it wasn't immediately successful. It was broadcast at rather unusual times. And in fact, on the BBC website now, Simon Jones, who played Arthur Dent in the series, says that if the BBC had set out to create a cult radio program, that's probably how they would do it, which was produce a science fiction comedy and put it on at very unusual times.
The idea of doing a science fiction comedy was very odd at the time. No one thought that that was going to work. It was just something that Douglas Adams thought there was an opportunity for. He thought he could do that and make it work.
Yeah, and it was tremendously successful. I think it just sort of developed a cult following. I think, as we said before, the sort of science features of it and the in-jokes about science and about time travel and so on just attracted an audience. I think it was very popular with students and scientists. And I certainly remember when I got to university, there were tapes of the radio series being passed around because it was so popular in the science departments.
There was another version that was released that's fairly obscure. You don't hear about it very much. And that is the LP, the version that was released as a record on vinyl. It was actually not the same as the radio version. They released two vinyl versions, which were later available on cassette. It came out in, I believe both of them came out in 1982. The first one was The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. The second one was The Restaurant at the End of the Universe, which was also the title of the second book. Those two were very much like the radio series, but they didn't quite have the same cast. They had most of the same cast, but not entirely the same cast. The way that it's set up and the plot that it follows in the LP version is sort of somewhere in between the original radio version and the TV version.
The next thing that came along after the LP versions were the novels. And the first two novels, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy itself, was published in 1979 and was closely followed by The Restaurant at the End of the Universe in 1980. And the first two books, fairly similar to the two radio series, although the second book does diverge slightly. Interestingly, I think Douglas Adams always described the second book as his favorite Hitchhiker's book of all the ones he wrote. And then after the television series, which we've been discussing, the third book in what was then designed to be a trilogy was Life, the Universe, and Everything, and that came out in 1982. And then 2 years after that, we had So Long and Thanks for All the Fish, which is a particular favorite of mine and introduces an element of romance for Arthur Dent and a rather charming character called Fenchurch. And then quite a lot later, in 1992, the fifth book, Mostly Harmless, in what they were, Douglas Adams was then calling the increasingly inaccurately named trilogy.
That's right. It was a trilogy for a short period of time, and then for quite some time, it was the trilogy in four parts. On the original release of the fifth book, it actually said on the cover, the fifth book in the increasingly inaccurately named Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy trilogy. And there are published versions of it now that say a trilogy in five parts. Different versions of the book sold over 15 million copies in Douglas Adams' lifetime. So this was a big-selling series.
They were extremely popular, and they still are. The BBC apparently turned down the opportunity to publish the novels themselves. So certainly in the UK, a publishing company called Pan picked it up and did very well as a result, I think. We often hear about books being described as laugh out loud funny, and I think sometimes that's not always the case. But in the case of these books, and certainly the first three books, they're just hilarious to read.
There was also actually a short story that's sometimes overlooked that's called Young Zaphod Plays It Safe, and that was first released in 1986.
It's worth hunting down Young Zaphod. The story's available. I think it has been published on the web. And it's worth reading. There's a few good Zaphod moments in there.
Yeah, and you can find it in Salmon of Doubt as well. So it's definitely easy to find. There was actually a fan-made radio version of it made that's available online. And I have listened to that. It's an interesting production. It's definitely amateur. It's not at the level of the Hitchhiker's radio series for sure. But it is sort of a fun variation on things to check out. It's okay.
Yeah, and it's got Adam's concern about ecology and environmentalism is part of the story as well. Some quite pointed remarks in it about us destroying our futures by our actions now. And it's also got a very good joke about grandparents and grandchildren, which is worth tracking down.
Another offbeat Hitchhiker's product that was out there was a text adventure computer game that came out in the 1980s. And this is a little bit of a cult classic of its own. It was actually really quite difficult.
It was fiendishly hard. I certainly never completed it, I'm afraid, but I know you could contact the company who produced the game, Infocom, and they produced a T-shirt for people who had managed to get past a very difficult episode in the game, which was to do with one of the features of the Hitchhiker's Guide, which was something called the Babel Fish, and you could get a T-shirt that said "I got the Babel Fish." Sadly, I don't have one of those T-shirts.
A friend of mine did actually finish that without the hint book, and I'll have to see if I could get him to record a detailed review of it for us to post on British Invaders sometime.
So ask him if he's got the T-shirt.
I'll have to ask him about that.
The guide also turned up in a number of stage plays. There were some theatrical plays produced in the late 1970s and early 1980s. I don't know too much about them. I know they had quite different casts from the radio show and the television show, although one or two of the actors did actually get parts in the television show on the strength of their performance on the stage. David Lerner, who ended up inside the Marvin suit, played Marvin on the stage. I don't think the stage plays were terribly successful at the time, and I suspect they just remembered as another sort of one of the facets of the Hitchhiker's legend. There were also comic books in the 1990s. DC Comics produced a three-part adaptation of the first novel, and they went on to do the same for the second and third books. And I confess, I haven't read these. I don't know how closely they stick to the books, but they came out. And more recently, you can also catch cameo appearances by Marvin the Robot from the television series in the Alan Moore Top 10 comics, if anybody knows those.
There was another project in the more recent Hitchhiker's saga that was a really neat one. They actually did a new set of radio series. As we had mentioned, Hitchhiker started as a radio series, and they did those original two series of Hitchhikers, and that turned into all of the other versions that we have eventually. but the third, fourth, and fifth books were not based on the original radio series. They were new original material. In 2004 and 2005, Hitchhikers came back to BBC Radio in the tertiary phase, the quandary phase, and the quintessential phase. They adapted the third, fourth, and fifth books for the radio, and it was produced by Dirk Maggs, and they did a great job of adapting those books. I actually haven't heard the fourth and fifth, but I did hear the third, and they did a nice job of continuing the feel of the original radio series. They actually got most of the original radio series cast back to do this. Now, if you remember, the original radio series was from 1978, and this was 2004, 2005. So we're talking about over 25 years later, and they had the original radio series actors for Arthur, Ford, Trillian, Zaphod, Marvin, and I think even Eddie, the computer, as well. They did not have the original actors for the voice of the book or for Slarty Bartfast, because Peter Jones and Richard Vernon had both died, and the replacement of Slarty Bartfast was pretty close. He sounded reasonably close to Richard Vernon.
And I think William Franklin took over the voice of the book.
Yes. What they did with the voice of the book was a very nice way of adapting it and bringing it up to date, because they had a new actor for the voice of the book who did not sound like Peter Jones. He had similar intonation. You could tell there was a similar feel. Part of the third book, Life, the Universe, and Everything, at the beginning of that book, the guide, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, is updated with new content that it receives over transmissions. And they did this in this radio version by having that update change the voice of the book somewhat, and they did something where you heard both the original voice and the new voice reading the same content, but it's switching back and forth and speeding up and slowing down, so it sounded like a transition to the new form of the book with this new voice in it. And that sounded very good indeed. I was quite impressed with how that was done.
It's quite nice to hear Douglas Adams' voice as well, because even though he died before these were produced, they managed to use recordings that he'd done as one of the characters, Agrajag.
Douglas Adams had always said that for a future movie or radio or television version, he wanted to do the voice of Agrajag. Douglas Adams had recorded talking book versions of all five Hitchhiker's books in the early 90s, I believe when the fifth book came out, and they used the dialogue recordings from that talking book to bring his voice into the radio version exactly where he wanted to have his own voice.
I think you ought to know I'm feeling very depressed.
Oh, God. Well, here's something to occupy you and take your mind off
it. It won't work. I have an exceptionally large mind.
Marvin.
All right. What do you want me to do?
And then the most recent version of The Hitchhiker's Guide, of course, is the big screen movie that was finally released in 2005. There'd been attempts to make a film of The Hitchhiker's Guide for over 20 years, and it's had a variety of directors and casts attached to it over the time. I think Steven Spielberg was rumoured to be directing it at one point. Finally, I think Touchstone Studios at Disney handed it to a somewhat unknown production team who go by the name of Hammer and Tongs, which is their sort of brand name for a chap called Garth Jennings, who directed the film, and the producer Nick Goldsmith. And interestingly, they were also best known for producing pop videos up until this point. So there were some similarities with Alan Bell, who produced the television series. Douglas Adams had worked on the script for the movie and produced the first draft. This had to be revised.
As is the case with almost every script for a film.
Yes, but sadly he wasn't around to work on the revisions. As the plot of the film, they pretty much cover the basic plot of the first book, but obviously, as with any new version of The Hitchhiker's Guide, they added new features, many of which had been created by Adams himself, in particular a quite long sequence where they visit the Vogons' home planet, which had a lot of Adams' elements and humour in it. And it was good to see the big budget production finally up there on the screen. The special effects were fantastic. I think it was the first time we'd seen the special effects that came close to what we'd imagined when we'd read the books or heard it on the radio. There was some criticism of the film that it had been rather modernized and to some extent Americanized. Most of the cast were American actors, or certainly the leading actors were, with the exception of Martin Freeman playing Arthur Dent. And it also, I think, got some criticism for playing up the romance between Arthur and Trillian and making it into a love story. Although I suppose that was inevitable because any big screen movie seems to need a love story.
Many of the changes, the added romance, all of those things came from Douglas Adams. In fact, Kerry Kirkpatrick, who was the other writer who worked on it, he wrote the final draft. What he has said in an interview was that he took the script that Douglas Adams had written, he took the first book, he took the radio scripts, he also had access to some of the material that Douglas Adams had in files on his computer. He basically took all of these different things that were written by Adams and edited them into this new version that became the shooting script for it. When they actually produced the movie, it had to fit into being a 2005 feature film. It had to be an adventure comedy, so it had to be faster paced. It couldn't have all of the sort of meandering humor and the lengthy guide entries that were going along and looking at different things as things progressed. Those were great, but they probably wouldn't work very well in a current movie that was going to be marketable. So it did have to have some changes for that.
Oh yeah, so the movie is worth seeing. It is very enjoyable. And there's lots of some very good stuff in there. Stephen Fry, I think, does a very good job as the voice of the book. And it's nice to see Simon Jones turning up yet again in a very brief cameo as a holographic head.
Now, as far as availability goes with all of these different versions of Hitchhikers, it's actually quite good. Most are quite easily available. There is a 2-disc DVD set of the TV version that we've been focusing on. It is quite easily available. It has lots of extra features in the second disc. The whole serial is on the first disc. They did sort of the best of all worlds, where there were a few scenes that were not included in the original broadcast, but were in the VHS release from the early 90s. A few scenes were in the TV version and not the VHS release. They got everything into this one and got a very nice cut of it. It looks very good. The Disney movie, of course, is available on DVD and also on Blu-ray, actually. The radio versions, all of the radio versions, are available on various CDs. The BBC actually has a CD set that includes all of the radio phases 1 through 5 in one set, and I believe that's only available in England, but you can order it from the BBC website, and I believe they'll ship that anywhere. The scripts of all of the radio series are available in book form, and the books, of course, are published in many different versions, and they're all quite easily available. So most every version of Hitchhikers that we've talked about, you can find somewhere, and you can usually find pretty easily.
Yeah, certainly the DVDs of the TV series we've been talking about are very easy to get hold of, and they're nice and cheap, and they're worth it for the DVD extras as well, including the making of feature, which is quite nice.
And those are available both as Region 2 DVDs in the UK and Region 1 DVDs in North America, and I believe in other regions as well. As far as our recommendation of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy goes, I would say you should find this. The Hitchhiker's Guide is worth looking at in some form. I think all of them are good. The TV version is a favorite of mine, although I like the others. This TV version is definitely well worth watching. You do need to have a little bit of tolerance for the sets and effects of the BBC in the 1980s, especially when it comes to the second head of Zaphod, but even so, it's well worth watching. This is highly recommended for me. And if you watched the movie version and found it a little bit lacking, as some people who hadn't seen or read any other version found, check out this TV version. Or the radio version, or the books, but check out the TV version. It's well worth watching.
Yes, I'd certainly recommend the TV version. I watched it when it originally came out and loved it, and I was slightly unsure about going back to watch it again. I thought I might be a bit disappointed, but it stands up very well. I had just as good a time watching it this time as I did back in the 1980s. As Brian says, if you can cope with a few of the minor weaknesses, in particular the second head, it's a very funny show. There's plenty of time for the jokes. Douglas Adams' concepts are just mind-boggling. So I would endorse Brian's recommendation. This TV series is worth tracking down and watching, especially if you've not encountered it before.
And while some of the TV versions that were broadcast in North America were edited in weird ways and gutted to make time for ads and so on and so forth, find the DVD. Check it out. Now, in summary, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was a TV miniseries by Douglas Adams based on a radio series that also had books and many other versions. It was wholeheartedly science fiction, space opera, and comedy. It involved Arthur Dent and Ford Prefect and other characters in this wonderful journey across the galaxy to discover all kinds of things and do and see all sorts of things. It's great fun, and it stands on its own, and it's different from almost everything else.
It's 6 episodes. It's cheap and easy to get hold of. It's the birth of a cultural phenomenon. Track it down.
You can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com and at www.britishinvaders.com. Our next episode will cover Robin of Sherwood, which was also called Robin Hood in the U.S. in some cases, and is a series that lasted a few seasons that's sort of a fantasy take on Robin Hood. Fun stuff. We will keep supplying lots of episodes of British Invaders to cover all of these great series. So thank you for joining us and listening to this show we call British Invaders. This is Brian from Canada, signing off.
And this is Eamon from England, saying thank you for listening, and so long and thanks for all the fish.